The Eden Pure Thunderstorm BOGO offer is on. This offer is for 1 week only and ends at midnight on Sunday. For allergies, pet smells, or any odor you need to get rid of, the Thunderstorm Air Purifier is the answer. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use discount code Howie. That's EdenPureDeals.com, discount code Howie. Shipping is free.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail.
You got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, the millennial with the mic, The Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Hi, besties. Welcome to The Grace Curley Show. I'm going to be your host for today, Jess Machado. I'm from WBSM out of New Bedford and Fairhaven. I have a little show there on Saturdays from 1 to 4. But occasionally I get tasked with coming in to fill for Grace, and I am thrilled to do that. Last time I was here, Jared, it was snowing and making me nervous drive home.
Yeah, that was my 3-hour commute back to the North Shore. Actually, 3.5 hours, I think.
Insane.
Brutal.
Today could not be any more opposite from that. On the temperature gauge when I came in today, it was 62 degrees, almost like summertime. You know there's some guy in a tank top walking into a Dunkin' today ordering a large iced coffee with two Splenda with like jorts on.
This is the fake summer or the fake spring that we get.
I'm here for it. I'm here for the Friday vibes. I'm here for the sun and the warm weather. It certainly beats the snow and the drive and the commute back. So couldn't be any more different from the last time I was here. I'm also far more relaxed. And Jared was like a great hype team for me today. He was like, we love you. Just relax and do your thing. So I feel better. I feel more comfortable. Happy to be here. It's Friday. It's my favorite day of the week. And we have a lot of stuff that we can get to talk about today. As always, you know, like in my wheelhouse, I love talking about Mass GOP. So we're going to talk about that in the third hour. And I'm hoping to get you guys excited about the future for the Massachusetts Republican Party. That all ties into the bigger picture of everything that goes on in this state and how you live your lives and how you get really good candidates to run for governor. So we're going to talk about that because I love talking about that. And I know you guys like listening to that, too. It is also, by the way, Super Bowl weekend, and a lot of people may not know. I'm a not-so-secret Kansas City Chiefs fan. I have been a Chiefs fan since I was 17. I used to watch Joe Montana when he got transferred from San Francisco over, traded to the Chiefs, fell in love with the team, and it has been misery ever since. But thanks to the gift of Patrick Mahomes, I got a Super Bowl win out of it a couple years ago, revisiting the playoffs year after year. But the plot twist in all of this is my husband is an Eagles fan. And so all of the stars have aligned for total chaos in our household. It is the battle between the Chiefs and the Eagles at the Machado household in Somerset. You know, my husband literally, as soon as he won that last game, sending him to the Super Bowl, was out on the porch putting out his old tattered Eagles, you know, banner and flag. And then I was like, so sure I can't reach. So I had to ask him to help me hang my Chiefs Super Bowl flag. And we get people driving by and beeping the horn and going crazy. And so we usually watch every football game together throughout the season. Sundays are always for football. I know, don't come at me, all you haters who want to cancel the NFL. It's like the last bit of joy I have in my life. And so it's obviously a huge moment for us that we're going to be playing each other. So I'm excited.
The Eagles are so much better than the Eagles.
Grease the light poles in Philadelphia, everybody, because if they win, it's going to be mayhem. I used to actually live outside of Philadelphia, and I love Philly. It's a great city to visit. If you haven't gone, go down there. It's an easy trip from here. Nice weekend trip to go down. There's a lot of culture, and you know, if you're an Eagles fan, you get to go talk about that one Super Bowl that you won. So excited for that, but we're going to talk later on in the show. There's cancel culture actually coming for the Chiefs this weekend. There's going to be a protest held out front of the Super Bowl by the same woman who started the movement to have the Redskins change their name. And obviously, I'm not okay with that, although it was a ticking time bomb as far as I was concerned. I'm like, when are they coming for them? So we'll talk about that story as well. Take a break, relax. Okay. You know, not to get into a somber note, because, you know, I really do want to try to stay positive heading into the weekend. But I think I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about what I think, you know, seems to be a pattern of Massachusetts really having its fair share, unfortunately, of, you know, domestic tragedies that have been taking place here in our state. We had, you know, this Cohasset presumed murder that took place right around New Year's Eve. And that story, unfortunately, has seemed to kind of fall by the wayside because we've had things that have jumped ahead a little bit. And then obviously just over the past day or two, you know, we recently had this Andover, you know, murder suicide that took place with a family. And that's really concerning. But as a mom, I can't help but think about the Lindsay Clancy Duxbury story that took place a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, this was an arraignment that took place this past Tuesday. I was pretty fixated on this. And I think that, you know, following this story, it seems to me to be a very polarizing subject. Some people are on one side of this where saying, you know, this is a tragedy where three children were killed. There's no sympathy for the mother. And then there's another side of this where people are talking about the mental health portion of this, the medication. And so those people are extremely sympathetic. And sometimes I feel willing to overlook the real tragedy and loss of life that has occurred. And so, you know, I wanted to talk about that. I want to make sure our listeners have an opportunity to contribute to this conversation too. You can always call us at 844-500-4242. Or if you don't want to call and you want to text, you can text Curly to 617-213-1066. And that's another way that you can add to the conversation. This past Tuesday, the arraignment that took place shed some light on this, where I think there were a lot of questions that people weren't really sure about the details of the situation. But the prosecutors had lined up basically a timeline on how things went the day of these murders. And I found myself to be pretty fascinated to learn that, you know, there was some, I would consider premeditated, you know, steps taken prior to the murder of these children. She Googled how long it would take for her husband to go to a location to pick up takeout. She tasked him with going to a location to pick up a prescription or some sort of over-the-counter medication. We also learned that during that time he called her and she answered the phone. And so some really disturbing details. But her attorney, Kevin Reddington, who's very, you know, notable attorney, my radar went up immediately. I remember he was the most recently an attorney for Jaisal Kerrer, the embattled mayor from Fall River. And so, you know, his stance on this was, you know, this is a heavily medicated woman who was struggling with mental illness. She sought help. She didn't get it. And this is the result of that. So, you know, I think moms have a tendency to be very judgmental in this situation. And go one way and say, you know, this is unbelievably tragic. There is absolutely no excuse. And no matter what, there were options. And then there's some other people that have said they've experienced postpartum depression and that they can understand how she got to this point. I'm not sure if the best thing for me to say is how I look at it very black and white. This is a murder of three children. I think that there's really no other way to look at this. She should be held accountable. Bail was set for her, but no monetary amount. And she's allowed to stay in the hospital and then transfer to another facility. She's not going to go see a prison right now. A lot of people were upset about that. Some people thought that she should be incarcerated or some sort of bail should have been set. But it was also disclosed, interestingly enough, plot twist, that she's paralyzed, whether it's temporarily or permanently, from her suicide attempt after the murders. And so, you know, some people are saying that's enough. You know, she didn't die. She's still here. She's not herself. She can't move. She wore a mask through the whole thing, which I thought was very convenient. It found me thinking that, you know, her face should have been exposed during that arraignment. It was done via Zoom. So she was in the hospital and not in court. And so, we got a masked version of her. She looked very, you know, very basic, nothing, no emotion or anything like that. And then another key piece to this puzzle that I find very interesting is her husband had issued very early on in this a statement via the GoFundMe that had been set up for the family, basically asking for, you know, the public and everybody to forgive his wife, that he's forgiven her, and he's asking for everybody else to do the same. I'm not really sure if I could do that. That's a tall order, Patrick Clancy, to ask people to, you know, forgive her, especially so soon. It was a very, very quick statement, you know, very early on in this process, where he issued that, asking for people to forgive her. I found that to be very interesting. And then, of course, one of the other things that I find a little peculiar is this GoFundMe that has been set up is well over $1 million. I checked yesterday, and it's well over $1 million. I'm sure it's far exceeded what they expected it to gather. And this originally had stated this was for funeral expenses and then to offset the cost of Patrick Clancy not being able to work, right, and all of those expenses. But it also is for the legal fees. And I've found that some people donated to this, I think, like their instinct was to help. Like, you know, they wanted to reach out to this family. And I think, you know, one of the great things about social media, I think, and the ability for us to connect online like this is you find like this instant gratification and way to be able to contribute and help in some way. And so GoFundMe is really a great vessel for that, where people can say, you know what, I feel a little helpless, but let me just donate a little bit of money. A little bit is a lot, over $1 million. But some of these funds are going to their legal fees. And some people aren't happy with that. Donating for the family is one thing. Legal fees is a little different. So we're going to continue to talk about that. We have a guest, Jeffrey Miller. He's a criminal defense attorney that's going to join us. And we're going to talk and ask him some questions about this case. I'm Jess. I'm filling in for Grace today. And this is the Howie Carr Radio Network.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
I don't mind this music. I was going to actually put in a request that all songs were like summer related and themed, just because we have a heat wave on our hands. It's poll question time, right? Yeah. Okay. So let's do that. Today's poll question is brought to you by the Nauset Beach Inn, which, by the way, is all aligned with my beach summery vibes. If you know what I mean, enjoy spring on the Cape with April rates at $179.99 a night, or schedule now to have your summer trip set with breakfast included Memorial Day through September 20th. Book online now at nausetbeachinn.com. I'm feeling summery. I'm feeling those beach vibes. What's the question of the day?
Today's question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is what's your big game prediction for Sunday? Chiefs in a blowout, Eagles in a blowout, Chiefs in a close game, or Eagles in a close game?
Well, I think it's very obvious. I'm going with number one, Chiefs in a blowout. I'm a winner either way, honestly, Jared. If my husband wins, great. But if I win, happy wife, happy life, as they say. So head over and vote on this poll. I'm interested to see. What do we have? Do we have numbers yet?
Yes, we do. 15% say Chiefs in a blowout. 9% for Eagles in a blowout, 30% for Chiefs in a close game, and 45% believe it will be the Eagles in a close game.
Shush it.
Right now.
No.
They're leader in the clubhouse.
Wait, what? You would think New England people would be upset with the Eagles after that win in 2019. Was it 2019, 2018? I don't know.
2018, yeah.
2018, whenever that thing
when
is
they
that
had
my
the illegal formation and they changed what a catch was during the game. Not mad.
Philly special, though.
Yeah, that was the illegal formation.
Philly special. Whatever it is and whatever year it was that my husband holds on to that so closely to himself and pulls it out in every sports argument he ever has with anybody, which is frequently, by the way, I'm a little shocked. I think you guys in New England are really scared of Patrick Mahomes kind of like giving some sort of rivalry to the Tom Brady legacy that has been established here. The awards were last night, by the way. Patrick Mahomes won MVP. So, you know, if that's anything. But please go vote. I'm interested to see. Can some people go and vote for the Chiefs, please? Jeez, my husband's watching. That's all. I'm just going to start texting me any minute. So thanks for that, by the way, John. So we're talking about the Lindsey Clancy case. And, you know, I felt like this was a little bit of a taboo topic to discuss. On my show last week, I brought it up, and we definitely had some people that wanted to call in either way and give their opinion. And just as I said earlier, people are either completely on one side or the other. There doesn't seem to be any in between. At the arraignment this past week, we got some really, you know, unfortunate details about what has happened here. And I hate to say it, but it's important, I think, to hear what happened. I think that when you're talking about, you know, something like this, people have a tendency to just automatically start feeling sympathetic. It's important to hear what happened. It's important to, you know, listen to, and I've listened to the dispatch calls that are available. The 911 call is not available. I'm sure it will be eventually. But the dispatch calls, it's really something like you can't unring that bell. Once you hear this, once you're feeling like you're in the moment and you're experiencing what this father experienced, you know, it weighs on you as a mom. And I think, and as a dad or anybody really, it's just a really tragic, tragic situation. But then you add to this layer of, you know, medication and, you know, being over-medicated. Kevin Reddington certainly set up the defense by talking about, you know, a litany of medications that she had been trying and that she had been put on. And some people are feeling as if, you know, she's a nurse, and so that she should have been a little bit more aware than the regular average person about the side effects to these things and how they could affect her mental health. And so, you know, you get drawn into that side of it where it seemed like maybe things were out of her control. I feel with the particulars in regards to this situation and what occurred, this just takes an evil person, to do this. And I'm not really sympathetic to it. And I don't know if that's the right thing to say here, but, you know, three lives are lost, and I feel like she needs to be held accountable for that. She should never see the outside of a prison ever again. I can't imagine, but there are people that are out there that are saying, you know, the price she's paid is her children are no longer here. And so that's enough. I mean, she should go back to just living her life and come back to society and maybe start a new family or have more children. I mean, that's incredulous to me. You know, people are just so flagrant to disregard the loss of life. And I think that this particular case is going to be one to watch. You know, I spoke with Jeffrey Miller. He's a criminal defense attorney, and he's going to be coming on after the break. And, you know, I was very curious on his thoughts on how could this go? You know, what are the scenarios? And he's unbelievably bright and certainly laid some scenarios out for me. So we're going to talk to him about that after the break. But I'm curious to see what people are thinking about this case, what your thoughts are on this. And then overall, you know, again, like I feel like this past month or so, you know, there have been some very serious domestic violence cases that are happening in our state between, you know, the murder-suicide just a few days ago, the Cohasset murder of Anna Walsh, which, you know, is still in itself a very intriguing story. And then this one in particular here. And then, of course, I think instinctually my mind automatically goes to COVID and how responsible that is for all of this. So let's talk more when we come back. I'm Jess. I'm filling in for Grace today. And this is the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Welcome back. I'm still not used to those transitions. Thanks for pointing me in the right direction, Jared. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I'm your host for today, Jess Machado. We have been having a brief discussion over the recent arraignment of Lindsey Clancy, the Duxbury mom who murdered her three children. And I think everybody's, you know, after the arraignment, kind of getting a little bit of a clearer picture about this situation, but we're still very curious about where this could lead and what could potentially happen. We've reached out to a friend of the Howie Carr Show, Jeff Miller. He's a criminal defense attorney of his own private practice in Boston, and he's here joining us today. Jeff, thank you for calling in. Do we have you, Jeff, by any chance? Let's try one more time. I see him on the screen. Okay. Blame the new girl. And while we're waiting for the guys to patch him through, you know, I was just reading some of the comments on Facebook where I had shared that we were going to be discussing this, and there's a lot of people that think that there may be no consequence for her in this case, that she'll be found not responsible by whether it's insanity or whether it's because of the prescription drugs that she's on. You know, I don't know if that's an excuse. There's a lot of details that were given during this arraignment where it seemed to me like this was very premeditated. It was planned. She seemed very cognizant of her surroundings. The prosecutor detailed that during the day she went to a doctor's appointment. It's, you know, one of those things. I know we're going to have to wait to hear more details, but until then, I think we have Jeff available. Let's talk to Jeff on what he's heard and what he thinks is going to happen. Jeff, how are you?
Okay. How you doing?
Good, Jeff. Thanks for joining us. Sure. I know that we talked a little bit the other day about this case, and I think everybody is very curious about what's going to move forward now that we've seen the arraignment. We've seen a couple of pieces of information that the public didn't know. Overall, what's your take on this case, first off? What are you thinking?
Well, so it sounds like there's a strong case here for lack of criminal responsibility, which in Massachusetts, so that's what it's called in Massachusetts. You may be familiar with it. Some people refer to it as an insanity defense, but essentially what the standard is in Massachusetts is if you are going to raise that as a defense, it's what's referred to as an affirmative defense. You would give notice of that. And essentially what you're saying is that your client is not criminally responsible because due to a mental illness or a mental defect at the time or around the time of the incident, that they were not able to conform their conduct to the laws of society. That's the standard for it.
Mm. So the medication piece of this, Kevin Reddington gave, you know, a very detailed description of, you know, multiple medications that she was on and that tried. And it doesn't seem like those things were working for her. Where does the medication come into play as far as her being, you know, the mental illness piece, I understand, but can the defense just lean on that these medications that she was taking could potentially cause harm to herself and others?
When you say, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. Could the medications cause harm to herself?
Could this be the main reason for her defense, is that she was on this medication and without it, she would have never acted this way?
Yeah, again, from what I've read, it was a kind of cocktail of medications. So it wasn't just one medication, but it was several. And the way that those medications interact with each other could have certainly had a negative effect on her, in addition to perhaps some kind of postpartum depression that she was suffering from.
In your experience as a criminal defense attorney, in any type of situation, have you ever seen anybody not held accountable for any type of crime using postpartum depression as the reason?
I have not personally had a case, but there are cases.
Okay, so this does come up.
Yes. There are cases that, you know, and again, anecdotally, I'm talking about, I've heard of them, and I know that it's a legitimate illness or defect that people suffer from.
What are your thoughts, Jeff, on the judge's decision to not set bail. And then the circumstances surrounding where she's going to be held, she's going to be at a medical facility. And then when she's moving on from there, I believe she's going to a rehab facility. Was this something that you would have expected? Is this out of the ordinary?
So generally speaking, in first-degree murder cases, it's people don't, they're held without bail. However, I think one of the things that is a common misconception in the public is bail is not punitive. So when you set a bail on someone, it's not to punish them in advance for what it is that's alleged that has happened, but bail is set for the purpose of ensuring that the person is going to return to court. And certainly in this circumstance here, bail or no bail seemed to be an appropriate order that was entered by the judge. There's a whole host of what they refer to as bail factors that go into the decision into whether to set a bail, and if you are going to set a bail, how much that bail is going to be. Again, from what I've read, it sounds like she is paralyzed, so certainly flight risk is one of the things, flight risk being, you know, is the person going to take off and move to another state, another country, go into hiding, anything like that. That
right.
Certainly doesn't seem to be a reasonable inference that that would happen here in this case. In addition to that, it sounds like she's got some legitimate medical needs aside from her mental health, but legitimate medical needs in the sense that rehabilitation for the injuries that have caused her to be paralyzed.
Let's go back a little bit to some of the statements that the prosecution had made. There was some mention of her Googling how long it would have taken for her husband to travel to go and pick up takeout. And it sounded to me like they were setting the stage for this was very premeditated. She spent the day doing regular things like doctor's appointments. As someone listening from home, when I heard the piece about, you know, looking up how long this person would take to travel and potentially giving her some time to commit these crimes, did that sound like something that was a little off to you and that maybe made this sound a little bit more deliberate and premeditated as opposed to something, you know, more of a mental health issue?
So, you know, again, without knowing what the prosecutor says at an arraignment, are those facts that are uncontested? Well, for the most part, at an arraignment, they are, but at a trial, they won't be, or they will be contested. So, you know, are there other things that, you know, explanations that could have been given for that? There quite possibly are. So just because the prosecutor says, well, this is premeditation, I mean, that's their job. That's what they're going to do. They're going to try and say that it's premeditation, and the defense is going to do its own investigation, and they're going to determine, whether or not that's appropriate.
I know it's early, and we don't know all of the facts of this case, but if you could predict what the outcome would be, as far as, you know, what she'll be held accountable for, if anything, how do you think this is going to go?
Well, I'm not a mind reader, and I know nothing more really than what I've seen in the news about it. And I can tell you that what is in the news is often very different than what is introduced at a trial. Mm. So, as that's a reason why we have a court of law. And there's a court of law with rules of evidence, and there are rules that surround a trial and why you don't try it in the public. So, you know, but what I can tell you from what I've heard relating to the case, it sounds like a very strong criminal responsibility defense if that was indeed what is going to be raised here.
Any thoughts on whether or not her husband could potentially be held responsible in any way for this, whether he left her alone or didn't notice any potential danger to his children? I've heard people bring this up. Any thoughts on that?
That's really, pure speculation there. as to, you know, what involvement he has, you know, from the perspective of if he were in some way negligent, I don't think that would impute to him as to, you know, any kind of criminal liability here.
Jeff, I know this isn't an easy subject, but I definitely appreciate your perspective, and I know our listeners do too. So thank you for calling in and giving us some feedback on this.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jeff. All right, guys. That was Jeff Miller. He's a criminal defense attorney out of Boston, a friend of the radio show here. So thank you, Jeff, for calling in. Still not an easy subject to talk about, but certainly we're going to be looking to the news and to see how this plays out. Let's take our break. 844-500-4242 if you'd like to talk about this. I am Jess. I'm filling in for Grace, and we'll be right back after this.
And our friends at Eden Pure are extending their BOGO deal on the Thunderstorm air purifier for one more week. The best-selling Eden Pure Thunderstorm air purifier BOGO is on. I love the product. I've talked about it. I like how I get the ionized air. It's been great for my allergies. It's also great for odors. And winter is still here. Don't let today fool you. And that means doors and windows are going to be shut and odors are going to be at their worst. Buy one, get one Eden Pure Thunderstorm air purifier so you can take care of cooking, tobacco, and pet owners. Many listeners, including Officer Mark, Dr. Matt the Vet, and Paul Rizzo, all rave about the Eden Pure Thunderstorm air purifier, and many listeners have made multiple purchases since they bought the first of these powerful air purifiers. They're small enough to hold in your hand. All you have to do is plug it into a wall, turn it on. You don't have to worry about cords. You have to worry about lugging big equipment around or cleaning nasty, dusty filters or anything like that. It's easy. It's great. It's clean air. It's what you want. Ask anyone who's bought one, and they will tell you how well the Eden Pure Thunderstorm works for allergies, pet smells, or any odor you need to get rid of. The Thunderstorm air purifier is the answer. So take advantage of the Thunderstorm BOGO offer today before it expires. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. That's EdenPureDeals.com and use discount code GRACE. Once again, EdenPureDeals.com, discount code GRACE. And shipping is free. Can't beat it.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Answering the hard-hitting questions of our time.
Let's say you're abducted by aliens.
Fine.
They haul you aboard the mothership, take you back to their planet as a curiosity. Now, would you rather be in their zoo or their circus?
It's the Grace Curley Show.
Fun fact. I don't like Seinfeld. I don't know why. I don't know. Either you love it or you don't, I think, right? I don't know. If it's on TV, I'm skipping over it. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Jess Machado. I'm filling in for Grace today. We're finishing up the hour, and the conversation has been surrounding the Lindsey Clancy case. And I don't know why, but I am just very angry about this situation. I'm very angry that there's a lot of sympathy for this mom. I'm angry that there's the potential that she could not be held criminally responsible for these murders. And I don't know what to do about that. I don't know how I can think of this any other way other than this was a tragic murder of three innocent children. And it just really, really gets to me. The arraignment that happened this past Tuesday certainly shed some light on this subject. And like I have said before, you can't unring that bell when you hear it. But we have a clip of the arraignment where the prosecutor talks about when she was Googling how long it would take for her husband to leave. I think Jared has that up for us.
Back inside later that day at 4:02 p.m., the defendant searched on her phone Kids Miralax. She then searched at Takeout 3V via her cell phone at 4:13 p.m. Immediately after doing that, she used Apple Maps on her phone to determine how long it would take someone to drive from her home in Duxbury to 3V restaurant in Plymouth, so she would know how long someone would be gone if they ran that errand.
That right there, I think that was like a pivotal moment for me in this arraignment. And I listened to that, and it instantly brought me back to the Anna Walsh situation where the husband was on his son's iPad and he was Googling all of these things surrounding, like, you know, everything involved. He Googled everything, honestly. It brought me back to that. And it's like, you know, listen, you have your phone right in front of you. You look through your Google history and what you're looking up. There's intent behind everything that you're typing in there. It's very rare that you're just kind of just haphazardly just clicking on things. I mean, she wanted to know how long he would be gone. And I'm not really sure if my brain can find like an explanation for that other than she needed to know how long she would have to kill her children. And so I can't think of it any other way. And that particular piece was a very interesting part of the arraignment. There was certainly, you know, conversation about or facts being, you know, talked about the actual events themselves, how these children were murdered. Her husband stayed on the phone with the 911 operator when he found the children. And I can tell you it's unbelievably difficult to hear them discuss that 911 call, but necessary. I think it's necessary. Another thing that was brought up in this arraignment too, which I can't kind of get past, is that she had never ever discussed being like, you know, hearing voices. And they talked about this, that the only time her husband had ever heard her say that she was hearing voices to kill her children was after the fact at the hospital on the phone of her attorney when she called her husband. I think we have that clip up as well. Thanks, Jared.
On February 5th, 2023, this past Sunday at 1:35 p.m., while sitting with Dr. Paul Zeisel, the psychologist hired by defense counsel to evaluate her mental state, the defendant used Dr. Zeisel's cell phone to call her husband. She left a voicemail stating that she loved him. Yesterday, on February 6, 2023, at 10:09 a.m., she again used Dr. Zeisel's cell phone to call her husband. This time he answered, and during this call, the defendant stated that after he left the house that night, she killed the kids because she heard a voice and had, quote, a moment of psychosis, end quote. He asked her what voices she heard, and she said she heard a man's voice telling her to kill the kids and kill herself because it was her last chance. Patrick Clancy told the police the defendant had never heard voices before. He also told the police the defendant had never used the word psychosis to him before. The first time she used that word psychosis was when she was with the doctor hired by defense counsel and using his cell phone.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying any of it. I think that's certainly great to say now after your children are dead and after you killed them. And I think that was another very, very telling piece to the prosecution statements on Tuesday. I'm not really sure how this is going to go. Instinct is that it's she's not going to be held accountable. There's too many factors here that are going to basically say she's not responsible. But man, I wish that she would be held accountable for this. It's a very, very sad situation. And I'm not really sure, you know, is a murder not a murder, not a murder? Are they not all the same? Someone is no longer here at the hands of another human. I don't know how it could be viewed any differently. So certainly this is going to be in the news. We'll hear more about it. But sad story all around. Let's take a break. How about that? And we'll come back after the top of the hour. I'm Jess. I'm filling in for Grace. And this is the Grace Curley Show.